Thank you so much to our podcast sponsor, Huckleberry. Find them online at huckleberry.co.nz for organic produce, whole food groceries, top quality supplements, and sustainable home and personal care products delivered to your door.
Hey everyone, welcome to How to Save the World. Today we're talking about recycling. I'm Waveney Wolf.
And I am Tim Batt.
Hey!
Hello.
Are you pretty amped to be talking about recycling?
I've never been more excited about anything in my dang life. I've done a lot of cool things in my day.
Wow.
This episode? Oh, number one.
Gee, so that's got to be like some pretty hard-hitting cynicism. Crikey.
I don't know. I know that you're very into recycling, but
do you have any burning questions about recycling?
I have a latent feeling in my brain that recycling is a crock.
That it's not legit.
Exactly.
And I think this is the persistent myth that it's not worth it.
I'm so glad to hear you describe it as a myth.
Well,
that immediately makes me more excited to hear about the reality of this.
So the reality is really interesting, and you actually have to understand the difference between the different materials that we recycle.
Right.
Some of them we shouldn't be recycling.
Right.
It's called wish cycling. When you throw something in the bin, just hoping that it's going to get recycled, and it's just causing havoc.
I actually have a lot of questions about recycling.
Oh.
So this should be good. For me, more of like from an operational point of view.
Like what to put in and that kind of stuff.
And if I'm doing it wrong, what happens? This kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah,
which I should be able to.
Yes.
You'll be able to get
into? I think so. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because I know zero about recycling.
And this is my thing. This is my geeky thing.
I've
spent 7 years at Auckland Council working the waste minimisation team there. And part of what we did was tours of all the different facilities. So I got to see glass being recycled and made into like new bottles and jars in OI and Penrose, and Visi, which is the big materials recovery facility where all of our curbside recycling goes in Auckland. Got to see landfills where all of our scrap metal goes and gets made into things. Carter Holt Harvey's paper pulp mill. I've got a good background in all of that stuff.
Right.
And still involved with Wastemans, which is New Zealand's representative body of all of the people in the waste industry, whether they're landfill owners or community recyclers or councils. A huge number of people involved with them.
Let's start at the absolute top, shall we? What is recycling?
Great question. It's a word that can get used, I think, a little bit broadly, which can make it confusing. So I would never talk about recycling my food waste. I would talk about composting my food waste. I specifically refer to... Oh, and sometimes people also talk about recycling clothing when they're dropping it off in a clothing bin. That's also not recycling. That's just rehoming or repurposing or reusing. Recycling is quite a specific process where you take a material and then it goes through some sort of a process where it gets squished up or melted or pulped or whatever. So it gets
changed in some way.
It gets broken up, mm-hmm. and then it gets reconstituted back into the thing that it was.
Right.
That's perfect recycling, going around and around. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we call recycling, we also in the trade like to call downcycling, where it's not really going around and around. So for example, if you were to take glass, and instead of taking it to the guys who make the glass bottles and jars, so if you take your glass bottle, put it in the recycling bin, and then somebody takes it to a place that might be making roading aggregate and they smash it all up and it goes into roads, mm-hmm. that is an example of downcycling. So it's still being used and it's great in lots of ways, but it's not recycling.
Is it inherently more bad than recycling? Or is it, because I don't know, if I hear the word down, I think bad.
No, absolutely. So there's a waste hierarchy, which mm-hmm. is basically just saying, in terms of the outcomes that we want for our society and for the environment. We basically are in a world now where we're running out of resources and we don't want to be putting lots of carbon into the atmosphere or any greenhouse gases. And so that's where the waste hierarchy comes from. It's looking at, let's say you go to the supermarket and I just realized I can't use this example anymore. Get a plastic bag.
just run with it.
Okay.
Back in the day when you could.
Use your imagination. You might say to yourself, this is okay because I'm actually intending to reuse this bag quite a few times. And sure, maybe you do. But there's no way that is better than just not having ever taken that bag in the first place and avoiding it completely.
Gotcha.
So, but of course, reusing it several times is better than just using it once and chucking it out. And then if you're going to take that bag and say, oh, this is okay because I'm going to put it in the soft plastics recycling scheme, but you're still only using it once, that's nowhere near as good as if you'd actually reused it a few times before you recycled it.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of a, without going into the theory of it, it's actually very intuitive that some things that you can do with waste are better for the energy and the resource base. Mm-hmm. So for going back to that example of a glass bottle, it's way better to
remain as a glass bottle.
Yes, because that's how we close. Like we talk about a closed loop or a circular economy, mm-hmm. and that's really important because at the moment we're taking too many resources from our environment, which is leading to like biodiversity loss, extinction, pollution, degradation of our environments. Really, really finite things that we're taking from the world.
That is such a crystallized explanation of the closed loop. What do you call it? The closed loop economy?
Circular economy.
Circular economy.
Yeah.
I hadn't really had a good grasp on it before, but that makes so much sense. It's people, like keep the things what they are.
Yes,
so we don't need to introduce more things to make more
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And I think that people often think of, well, actually, probably people don't often think of waste at all. That's the thing. But if you are, think of it, oh, it's a sector, just like the health sector or the education sector or the business sector or whatever, and all of those subcategories. But actually, I like to think of waste as it's just actually
a fun project you can do with your friends and family.
Thank you, Tim.
Nailed it.
Yeah,
you roasted you.
Yeah, you did. You did. It's me thrown through.
No, sorry. What were you going to say?
Is that it's actually half of everything. It's not just a sector. It is actually all sectors have inputs and outputs, and that's where waste sits. And so recycling isn't just something that we do over in the waste sector. It's something that everybody in whatever sector it is, they need to be thinking about what they're doing with their materials and their products and how they can recycle them back in and close those loops.
It's a way of life, man.
I'm feeling like I'm going to run out of time because I just spent 10 minutes talking about the definition of recycling. So it's recycling's great because it avoids landfilling, litter. Remember that Fox River disaster where
so
the rivers cut it?
So a big storm went through a closed landfill and basically strewed rubbish from decades ago all across this pristine land
and
waterways.
Ever this happens, because I know a few times when it has happened, sometimes it's just through regular earthworks or whatever when a new road's going through and for whatever reason a landfill is dug up. Mm-hmm. Every time the comments are, oh, this stuff just looked like it went in yesterday.
Scary.
Scary. And I know someone who was helping out down there, volunteering to clean it up, and they just said they never wanted to see another single serve butter container in their life.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, because it's a touristy area, right?
They're like time capsules, but the worst version of
them. Yeah, you just don't need. So, I mean, you know, what's wrong with a little triangle of butter on your plate?
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're kind of getting into the place of recycling. Like, yes,
okay.
Of course, it's great to recycle, but please, people, if we can avoid the little single-serve plastic butter container in the first place, because the stuff never goes away, whether we're recycling it or not, plastic will still always be plastic.
So that said, recycling.
Yeah. So that's why recycling's awesome. And why we should bother, because it's so much better than just having it going, ripping through our system once and then going from one extraction hole, ripping through our system in less than 6 months and then bang, dumped in a landfill forever.
Yeah.
But there is this persistent myth around recycling if it gets dumped or if, you know, what happens to it. So on the one hand, you've got the people who say recycling is a commodity.
Okay. Commodity. So it's like a market approach to recycling.
Yeah, and it is. Like say if you've got a full shipping container going off overseas full of your bales of plastic or whatever, like who do you think, who pays who? Do you think we're...
Question. Yeah. I honestly don't know. I would suspect that we would probably pay to get rid of it.
No, it's the opposite. Someone is paying like at least 10,000 plus for a container load of our plastic.
Of stuff. Yeah. I guess that makes sense because it's raw material that
that's
you
right.
can do something
that's,
with.
Yeah, so it is actually, it is a commodity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it typically would be a company, if it is a container going offshore, it's probably typically a company in Asia that's just paid, you know, 10 or 15,000 for this product. So on the one hand, you know, great, we've just busted that myth, right? Obviously, yeah. It gets recycled because people are paying for it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I came across a woman, Pualei Pung from Malaysia, who especially came to New Zealand to visit us to tell her what's happening in her village. And she said that, so I'll give you a bit of context, which we'll get to in a second, about how China changed some policies and basically stopped accepting a lot of our recycling, which meant that suddenly a huge amount of it was going to Malaysia. So she came to us last year in 2018 to say that her village had become a dumping ground basically overnight and that our recycling was poisoning her home. And she said that mostly it's being just dumped in a mountain of waste or being burnt. And I've got a quote from her. New Zealand may think that they have high recycling rates, but really it's being sent to other places like Malaysia and not being recycled. People in developed countries felt like recycling was the solution, but that myth was just encouraging more and more waste, she said. So the plot thickens, eh?
How is this happening?
I know.
If someone's paying for it, why?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why would you pay $10,000 for something you're going to burn?
Exactly, exactly. So that's what I have been ferreting around and been finding out. And before we get into that, because you really do need to understand a bit of context,
mm-hmm.
So I thought the basic question is kind of what happens to my recycling? And this would be like, say, your curbside recycling. So do you have much of a sense of when you put it out at the gate, what happens, like where it
absolutely
goes?
Absolutely none.
Really?
There's
wow.
a truck and then I'm like, see ya.
Yeah.
That's done.
So in Auckland, it goes to a massive, it's called a MRF, which is a materials recovery facility. It's not a place where the recycling happens. It's a place where things get sorted and typically bundled, or actually it's called baled. They bale it up and then when they've got enough of something, they'll find a buyer and send it maybe to another place in Auckland or maybe off overseas, usually depending on what the actual product is. And then depending on where you are in the country, your recycling might be going to a smaller version of that, essentially conveyor belts, not very many people, lots of machines that automatically can sort things, or it could be going to a community recycling center, which is similar outcomes, but really different models, so kind of really tweaking the outcomes, more jobs, much better quality recycling that comes out of it because they're sorting by hand.
And does that generate a sort of like a more premium product
it
at the other
absolutely
end?
Does so they're right. getting more money for their recyclable commodities, and in fact actually they're able to recycle more as well. So some of the things that the larger centers are having to landfill, these guys are still able to find markets for because they've done such a great job sorting it.
Can I ask a couple of questions about these MRFs?
Yep.
Or is it going to sidetrack here?
No, well let's just do it.
How does it work in there? How automated are they? Like what physically is going on? Because in my head this is what happens. There's a bunch of dump trucks that go in and put it on in a central place, and there's a conveyor belt.
How big do you think that conveyor belt is?
I've no idea. It's massive. I don't know.
Three
it's
stories.
As big as a person.
Three stories.
Three stories.
Yep.
But obviously horizontal, right?
No, on a diagonal.
Oh, feeding.
So it goes,
goes
from
so
the ground
grabbing.
Feeding up.
Okay. And then in my head, for some reason, there's claws in the mix, picking things out.
Yep.
Is that in there?
No, claws. What else?
Stuff has to get sorted
Magical
somehow.
Magical things. Actually, look.
Is there a sieve?
Yes, totally. It's actually, look, it's the coolest thing. It's funny because I am such a fan of community recycling centres for all the right reasons. They're awesome. But those big MRFs are like, whoa, they make you feel really small. And it's so impressive, some of the things that they're doing. They're basically, they start with the question, what makes this item physically different to another item, and therefore whatever that quality is, what can we do? Like, for example, some things are just naturally lighter, so yeah, they'll have a wind tunnel and the lighter things go, gotcha, in one direction.
So some, we can separate the plastic from the glass and metal by blowing it around.
Yep. Some things will be attracted to a metal, to a magnet. Yeah. Some things will be will react to an eddy current.
Is it electricity?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. What else?
That's so...
Oh, it's so cool. It's so fun.
Science.
Yeah,
lab.
It is. It's a big science thing. And with the plastic, at Visi again, I'm not quite sure if this is the case typically, but they use an optical sorter. And this is a bit beyond...
There's the claw.
No.
Surely.
It's a laser beam that goes through the plastic as it's going past and can identify if it's PET or HDPE or whatever. And then if it identifies something, it will give it a little blast of air, which sends it off in a different direction.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So that's how MRFs work.
Wow.
Yeah. So MRFs obviously have got some real positive sides. And one of the things that councils typically say about MRFs is that because they've got these facilities to help sort all the different types of recycling, it saves us as the public having to separate at source.
Yeah. And we're shit at it anyway.
And that's what people they say. So that's what councils say. It's like, we're all lazy, we're all terrible recyclers, so let's just make it really easy. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the big philosophy of a MRF, that it's going to be easier for everybody. It's the lowest common denominator. And
I imagine with MRFs versus community sorting, you can scale it up a lot more as well. Because you could, like, less humans involved, so you can just run it 24/7. Don't have to pay workers.
It's cheaper. Yeah, so there are a few people that work at them regardless, and they're typically at the start of the line, pulling out the really horrendously inappropriate stuff that shouldn't be there, like horses' heads and stuff. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, but no, mostly it's the machines that sort it. So the product that you get from a MRF is never going to be as good, and that's one of the problem, because basically what we're going to be, the conclusion of what I'm going to be saying today is that recycling is good, but there are some fundamental problems with the way we do it in New Zealand, mm-hmm, that are actually have some quite easy fixes.
Okay.
And some of those will be just things that the government needs to just go, yep, bang, bang, bang. And then some of them are things that we as consumers need to be aware of. So one of those things is glass, commingling, or putting the glass together with the other.
I think we know what commingling could mean.
Oh, I thought it was jargon. But anyway, sorry for dumbing it down.
The glass getting amongst the other stuff.
Yeah, so when that breaks, and often it actually breaks because the trucks they're going into are compaction trucks, so it's got no chance of not breaking.
Yeah.
When that breaks all through the other materials, particularly paper, mm-hmm, it really brings down the grade and what people are able to do with it.
Yeah.
So you've got broken glass shards all through your paper, and then you try and take that to a pulping facility. Mm. That just ruins their machinery and makes it very difficult. So getting your glass out of your recycling is a really good first step. Mm. Anyway, I really feel like this is a bit of a digression. Because we are talking about what happens to my recycling from the curbside.
Yes.
And I was saying that it goes to a MRF or to something equivalent of a community recycling centre.
Mm-hmm.
And then regardless, it's baled or sometimes bin, just put in a big bin. And then it's sold as a commodity to the person who wants it. And then it's transported.
And I assume there's various grades that you get to sell it at.
Yep, that's
community
right.
Community one,
yep.
Higher grade, higher price.
Yeah, so for example, my understanding, I put it this way, last time I checked in with them at Visi, they were pulling out for the number two plastic, which is milk bottles, and a whole other bunch of stuff. They were actually just pulling out the milk bottles because that was a thing that was sort of most value to them, and mm-hmm, the rest was going to the mixed bale, threes to sevens. Whereas, say, at Wanaka Wastebusters, I talked to their recycling ops manager down there, and he told me that they've got three grades for number two.
Okay.
And so they actually create these bales of within the plastic grade number two, there's three different grades. And because they're doing that sorting, they're getting a higher price for each bale.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, there's quite a big difference between what happens at the various plants.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the end of the day, in terms of...
I'm still on the hook for this mystery of why it's being burned in Malaysia.
Yeah.
So, it's a good hook.
Yeah. So, right. So then it's getting sold. So we're getting closer to our Malaysian mystery. And really up until about... 2018, most of our recycling, plastic recycling, especially the crappy grades, was just going straight over to China. And globally, China takes about half of all of the world's recycling. So then they just announced quite abruptly something called the Green Sword in 2017, which was basically China making most of its recycling industry illegal. So suddenly, globally, everybody is scrambling around going, what the heck are we going to be doing with this stuff? Like the scale of, like, it didn't take long before it affected us in New Zealand. It wasn't just plastic too, by the way. It was a lot of paper and cards. So the fiber stuff got affected as well.
What was their reason for doing it? Did they kind of get to a stage where it wasn't useful anymore, whereas it used to be? Taking the world's rubbish, essentially?
Yeah, I've heard actually almost a different answer for that question for every person I've spoken to, ranging from they wanted to develop their own domestic market as they would get more middle class, they've got more of their own product, and they wanted to focus on recycling that, through to they don't want to be accepting our crap anymore and the associated environmental hazards with it.
Yeah, right.
Through to they just wanted to, it was a bit of a...
Like a prestige thing?
No, the other one I heard was more about China wanting to get taxes off big companies that they could tax, and it was really just cutting the knees off all of the poor little guys that didn't know the right people in government and didn't have the right connections or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, that Green Sword came down, and it wasn't long. In fact, you might remember last year, because it was in the news a lot, suddenly there were all these stories of stockpiling.
Yes.
And that was something I was interested in too, because I tried to find some recent articles. I wanted to know, are those stockpiles still there? Are they getting bigger? Are they getting smaller?
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anything. The media stopped reporting on it. But I did speak to a couple of people who knew what was going on. And basically... No, they're not getting smaller, but they aren't getting any bigger. And it actually all comes down to the 3s to 7s. So that,
what is that?
The plastic. You know how you've got the little recycling numbers in the triangles? 1, 2, 3 to 7? So 1 and 2 are still pretty valuable, but 3s to 7s are really what are this is what's causing the big stockpiling issue, because we're still able to sell 1 and 2, but 3s to 7s are the things that have been stockpiled. So councils around New Zealand are currently have either stopped collecting 3s to 7s, and it's just going, householders are just putting it straight into their rubbish bin, or they are collecting and landfilling it in the hope that there'll be a change in situation and they'll be able to go back to recycling it. Or they're stockpiling it. Or they are managing to sell it. So those are the four different things that are happening to 3s to 7s. And I can talk a bit more about for example, really, it's the prices have just plummeted. So with China put up this Green Sword, it basically... meant that there was this enormous glut on the global market, and so the prices just
bottomed out.
Yeah. And it has meant that unless you live, for us in New Zealand, it has meant that unless you live right next to a major port, which is just Auckland, Wellington or Christchurch, then you've got no show of getting it to a market and breaking even. So it is just Auckland, Wellington and Christchurch that are still collecting and processing threes to sevens, because they're still managing just to make ends meet with that.
I imagine that other councils around the country are still collecting threes to sevens because it's part of the system, and what they that just goes to landfill now.
Well, that's what I was saying, that some of that that there's three things right. that they're doing. Some have stopped collecting right. threes to sevens, and they've announced that to their right. public. Some are collecting and landfilling, and some are stockpiling.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, regardless, the prices have just plummeted. So that's the other big thing that's happened. PET, which is number one, plastic, that was $400 a ton, which is stuff all when you think about how much a ton is. Eh? Yeah. So there's really not much money in recycling.
Yeah.
And we can talk about it as a commodity, but it's still important. It's important to see it as that, because waste is a resource and we need to understand it as the gem it is for closing that loop for the circular economy. But it also is, there's a gap basically between what someone's prepared to pay for that commodity and what it might cost you to get it to them.
Yeah.
And so that gap is something that we need to just have some pretty smart stuff in place to make sure that it's not the community or the environment that pay for that, which currently in New Zealand it mostly is.
Right.
It's mostly ratepayers that pay that gap. But PET was $400 a ton and now it's around $100 a ton.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, huge.
And what kind of time frame are we talking about? Is that just like over a matter of years that that's changed?
That was since China's green sword.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
That was the effect of
Yikes.
It. And same with cardboard as well. Cardboard is now something that people are often actually asking people to pay a small amount of money to drop off.
Oh, so it's actually flipped. It's a negative amount of money now.
Yeah, so exactly. There used to be money in it, and now the recyclers can't quite make ends meet.
Right.
Yeah. But they're still getting paid for it, but it's just that there's a bit of a gap. It costs them a bit more to get it to market.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Sorry. So it's, I got that. So the cost of sorting it, getting it to people, is not meeting the amount that they can make off it.
That's right. That's right.
The net
amount
is a negative rather than a positive.
That's right.
It's a net cost.
Yes. I'm just looking at this. I've got a good example. It's not about plastic, it's about glass.
Go on.
So from Wanaka, they get paid $10 a ton of glass to get it from at the door through the gates in Christchurch. So if they can get it to Christchurch, they'll get $10 for the ton of glass.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs them from Wanaka to Christchurch $80 to transport it, plus the staff time to create that ton of glass in the first place.
Okay, I can see where the problem
lies. Yeah. So in this case, it's a business collection, and the business was pay that gap.
That shortfall.
Yep. And what's good to keep in mind is that it's not usually, like if it's a curbside collection, the way we've got our laws, our setup at the moment, it's usually not the businesses that are paying. It's us ratepayers.
Is that where you're going with this?
Totally. Shifting that gap.
What I'm thinking of is beer companies. They make so much money in New Zealand, and part of that profit margin includes the fact that they've got all this glass that they're kind of using, you know, for free, and tin, I guess, for their cans.
Mm.
And they should be footing the bill to help process this part of their product.
Yep, absolutely. So it's shifting that gap from at the moment it's the community and the environment, and it's shifting it to the producer and the consumer, which is what, I mean, you know, if I buy a thing, I'm happy to pay for the damage I've done at that point of buying it. I don't want to sort of suddenly be hit up for it when I'm chucking it away and doesn't have any value to me.
Yes.
Actually, I'd rather just pay, if I've just paid $1,000 for, a new bed,
then,
you know, I'm happy to pay an extra $20 at that point.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even know,
right?
And that's sort of what we need. And actually, there is right now, we've kind of got a once in 10-year opportunity. There's a discussion document out and we can submit on it. The government's asking us, do we agree with what they've said in terms of what are priority products, which are the particularly tricky or toxic things, like might be agricultural waste or tyres or e-waste. No, car batteries aren't on the list, Tim. But you could submit and suggest that they do put car batteries in the list.
I don't know how common it is to throw away car batteries.
Well, I think it's a thing. But actually, there's value in car batteries. Yeah, there's true. Some of the things that get stolen out of recycling centres. Right. They have to lock them up. Oh, now I've said that, I'll probably release a chain of them.
We've got a lot of crims listening to
our podcast. Yeah, yeah. Actually, we might be right, come from second thoughts. So on
this discussion paper, they're asking us to identify what the...
No, you can comment, but they've already identified six things. Mm-hmm. And so I recommend that people just go through and say, yes, 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 I agree. All of these things should be priority products. And in the show notes, we can give you links to where you can make that submission.
What is that? What would that do? Telling the government to highlight these?
Good question. Okay, so the second half of the document is also asking for our opinion on product stewardship schemes. So anything that's identified as a priority product then gets its a brand new regulated product stewardship scheme, which the big difference is at the moment all of our product stewardship schemes are voluntary. Like a great example is Resene. They've probably done one of the best examples in New Zealand, where when you buy a can of Resene paint, I'm not quite sure what the extra bit is, but you pay a little bit of extra when you're buying the paint, and that goes into their recycling fund. And then when you return the can, they already have that money because you've already given it to them maybe a year ago or whatever, and they are able to recycle that can at no cost. They also take other people's cans, but you have to pay that money then because it hasn't already been paid. So that's a really good example of a scheme that's been working quite well. But on balance, we're just chucking out more and more stuff, and we're just only really scratching the surface.
Is this one of those things like carbon offset where it sort of scratches that guilty itch, so it just encourages overconsumption in some people? Is that what you're saying?
I think mostly the consumers haven't really been... They're not really at the centre of this play. This is really about businesses that have been saying, don't regulate us, for goodness sakes.
Gotcha.
We're okay, guys. We are okay. We've got these wonderful
anything.
Voluntary schemes and there's nothing to see here.
Gotcha.
And actually, we know statistically that it just hasn't been happening. Sure, you can maybe paint some cool pictures about what you might have done with some plastic that you got that you were able to recycle. But if you actually look en masse about all of that particular waste stream and the percentage that was captured in terms of a meaningful recycling program, it's epic fail. And what we need, and what the government is now saying in this discussion document, is let's identify what these priority products should be, and then let's agree on what the schemes could look like so that we will just have a regulated scheme across the industry. And a really good example actually is tyres. They've actually been, as united, all of the different tyre companies in New Zealand, even back into the John Key government days, have been asking the government for some regulation for their industry, saying, guys, it's just too hard. If I do it and that guy doesn't, then he's got a competitive advantage, and it's too hard for us all to coordinate. Can you please just do it for us?
Right.
And so it's actually quite a positive thing because it just creates a new level playing field and we can all just get on with it. And it's just, consumers love it too, because then they don't feel like they're having to pay for something when it's crappy to them and they're just trying to get rid of it, and they get hit with a fee that they weren't expecting. So another really good example is on bottles, like a Coke bottle, milk bottle, anything like that, just the 10 cents that you would pay at the time that you buy it. And then when you recycle it somewhere, give it
South
to the
Australia.
Scouts, exactly, whatever.
They all say.
The Scouts make millions, right, in South Australia.
Bring to a refuse station in South Australia for 10 cents.
Yeah, yeah. So it would be millions of dollars.
I don't live in Australia, Waveney. I live in New Zealand.
Well, I think that this, we might be getting very close, actually.
Right.
So it is actually really worthwhile just spending
it. So how do the Scouts fit in with this? The Scouts get the 10 cents?
Yeah.
Oh, they go around collecting bottles?
Yes.
Okay, never mind.
Yes,
I get it.
Yep. And they operate some of the collection points too.
Gotcha.
So anybody could sort of put their hat in the ring for it. And that, I guess that's one of the key things in terms of how you design the schemes, whether you get the manufacturers who've created the bottles products or whatever to get them to manage the scheme, or whether you get community groups to or whatever. And there's all sorts of arguments for who would be best placed to do that. But anyway, let's get back to what happens to our stuff in Malaysia.
Oh, what's going on with Malaysia?
What's happening?
I would like to take this chance to thank the incredible folk at Huckleberry, the sponsors of this podcast.
Have you visited your local Huckleberry refill hub, Tim?
I have not yet.
Well, they're your no wastage way to shop.
That's good news. I've heard on the street that I could head into store for a premium selection of the very best organic and natural whole foods in bulk. Is that true?
Yes, it is, Tim. And for extra points, you can bring your own container or choose one in store to take home. And buy only what you need so nothing goes to waste.
I will definitely be visiting the Huckleberry Refill Hub and find out where my local store is at huckleberry.co.nz.
Yes, very dear to my heart. The Refill Hub is so fantastic. I love it.
Thanks, Huckleberry. Okay, so hold on. Before we go too much further, let's see. So I just want to kind of like recap a little bit what I've learnt so far.
Great.
Okay?
Okay.
So, okay, firstly, I'm still on the hook with this Malaysia thing. Yep. I don't know what's going on.
Yep.
So we've got recycling set up around the country. I'm putting it in my bin. It's going to a truck. There's broadly speaking two different versions of places it can end up at. One's yep. quite heavily automated yep. and one is a bit more people-centered.
Hands, manual, yep.
And you can get different sort of qualities and gradings of these big bales yes. or collections of raw material, which are then sent all overseas?
No, we've got okay. quite a strong market in New Zealand for various,
right.
like glass is so a good example, some paper.
They're processed somewhere at an industrial
yep.
scale.
Yep.
And China recently made a decision that they were going to stop accepting the world's recycled material.
More or less, yeah. They still accept the high quality stuff.
Caused the global markets to bottom out, or the prices to bottom
out. Total bottom out. And big stockpiles.
A huge crisis of where it's going to go. And when you change the price, it's like, well, we can't even afford to ship it now. And it changes all those calculations.
Part of that was Busy, the materials recovery centre in Auckland, getting a massive like $29 million bailout from the council.
Whoa, that's a lot of money.
It is, eh?
Okay.
So that was a crisis, basically, then, 2018.
And then we've talked about some different approaches in terms of getting industries to sort of self-regulate. And an example of that is Resene with yes. their paints, where they price in at the time of original yep. purchase
yep.
to account for a program to look after the materials. Or government-led external programs.
Yep.
And an example of that would be like the tyre industry in New Zealand.
Well, we don't actually have a good example of that.
Oh, we don't?
So
okay.
it's about
so it could be the tyre industry where they've yep. all gone, this E-waste, is too difficult. Yep, we want yep. to all yep. play on a level playing field so the market isn't distorted and we get unfairly disadvantaged for having a good program that we've got to pay for somehow. Yep. So just do it for us. Yep. So we have to play by the rules.
Yep.
Okay. So now where are we going?
Now let's get back to 2018. China closes its doors. What's been happening in the last year?
Okay.
So one of the big things that happened was that, and I think I sort of alluded to it before, is that suddenly these little, well, I don't know how little they were, but these guys in China that got shut down, they actually just went overseas, and a lot of them just went to Malaysia or Indonesia and then set up again.
Ah.
And so then suddenly New Zealand and Australia, they're all on the phone trying to find this, you know, new destinations. And so basically overnight, Malaysia started taking huge amounts of the world's plastic waste that they weren't previously set up for. And so that's kind of takes us to where we are today. I can just run through the various recycling items. Like,
Are we going to solve the Malaysia mystery?
Yeah, sure. Well, we can skip straight to that.
No. We can't. You do.
Oh, no. All
it's a good mystery. You're supposed to reveal it at the end.
Do you know what I was going to do? Is just go through like plastics, 1 to 7, starting with number 1. That's what I was going to do. And then I was going to do number 2. And then I was going to do number 3 to 7. So basically, just to say that 1s and 2s, I think I've already highlighted it really.
I'm going to avoid the obvious joke. Talk about 1s and 2s.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, this gets funnier then if you've got that in the back of your mind. They still have value.
All waste has value, even your ones and twos.
And most of our recycling is actually one and two. So that 3 to 7.
What is it? What is physically? What's one and two?
One is your drink bottles.
Okay.
And two is...
So like a water bottle, you know?
Yep. So your drink bottles are PET, it is, mm-hmm. or one, and then HDPE is milk.
Gotcha.
Basically, you know, a few other things thrown in there. So they've still got good markets. And what's cool is that both of those have got good examples of markets in New Zealand.
Great.
Yeah.
Being processed locally.
Yes, being processed and actually made into stuff right here in New Zealand.
That is good.
Yeah, we've got Flight Plastic in Wellington. They're doing great job with number ones. Just clear.
Still funny to me. Oh, so mature.
No, you've said it. I don't know how I'm going to get through this section.
Well, you put a comedian on your podcast, Waveney, and you keep talking about ones and twos. I'm going to connect the dots, okay?
I'm losing it now. They get made into drain pipes.
Love it. Perfect.
So that's pretty much it for them. But there's a big difference in the price. So we really need to be avoiding. So with the milk bottles, it went to... We mostly just had clear a few years ago, and we've actually gone to coloured, and that really dropped the price from 600 to 300, roughly. Half the price.
Right.
For not being able to... basically, there's no difference to anyone. Just buy your milk in clear bottles is the take-home message here. It makes a massive difference to the recyclers.
Okay.
Clear anything for recycling. Same for glass. It's just it's intuitive. You can make stuff. You can do anything with clear. You can add anything to it. It's your basic thing. As soon as it's coloured or even just opaque, it really reduces your value in your market.
Cool.
Yep. Whew. So that leaves us with 3s to 7s.
Yeah.
We are getting very close to what's going on in Malaysia. So the first thing, I guess, is to put it in context, is there's not actually much of this stuff in people's recycling bin. So it's probably only about 5 or 6% of what's in an average recycling bin would mm-hmm. be 3s to 7s. And of that, about half, I think it's about half of that grade, is number 5, which I'm going to talk about separately because that's actually, of the bad stuff, that's actually probably the most redeemable category.
Okay.
And we've already got recyclers in New Zealand that are accepting number 5. So if not so much in the big processing facilities, but the community recyclers, if they're able to pull out 5, and if they can get it to Christchurch,
What is 5?
It's often the grade that you use in the fridge or the freezer. So ice cream, yogurt,
okay.
that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. Like a punnet for yogurt or
yes,
ice cream tub?
Yeah, often. Yep.
It's a 5.
Yep. You check it. You want it to be a 5. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those yogurt ones are a 6.
Okay.
But check it and go for the 5. So they put an additive in it that, you know how if you freeze a takeaway container, it will smash if you
yes.
break it? Whereas if you drop a margarine or an ice cream container when it's frozen, it won't.
Yes.
That's the quality of a number
gotcha.
5. Yeah. So back to your 3s and 7s, just a small amount of it in most people's recycling bin, and you get a lot less for these bales than you would for a 1 or 2. And so I said before about how this makes it actually uneconomic for most of New Zealand. There is no onshore recycling options in New Zealand for 3s to 7. So all of our 3s to 7s go overseas. So I mentioned before we had Wellington, Christchurch and Auckland. They're really the only 3 that are still managing to find markets. There's 2 models of how you can sell your recycling overseas. You can have a partnership with a particular destination mm-hmm. and you know where it's going, and you might be able to go over and audit what they're doing or whatever. Or you can sell it to a broker, and then the broker sells it to factories across Asia typically for processing, and it's very hard to track what happens to that. So Wellington is in partnership with a group in Malaysia. Christchurch is in partnership with Indonesia, and Auckland uses a broker.
Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. So
it's interesting that within a country, our 3 biggest cities have 3 separate approaches.
Yeah.
To this.
Yeah. And you know, people often ask me, "What happens to my recycling? Where does it go?" And usually, you just say, "Well, it really does depend on who the highest bidder might be, or what's happening in terms of that commodity." Like, it is a commodity market. Yeah, where you live, definitely. Like, talking to the guys in Wanaka, that it's a completely different set of issues that they have to what a recycler in Auckland would have. So in Auckland, they would be, it would be so expensive for them to have space in Auckland because of the price. Whereas, of course, in Wanaka, well, mind you, these days, Wanaka's kind of gone through the roof too, but they've got space there, and that's not their issue. What their issue is trying to get things to mostly to the Auckland market. Like glass, for example, there is only one place in New Zealand that can go if you want to turn it back into a glass bottle or a jar, and that is Auckland. So the closer you, and because it's heavy, it really makes a massive difference. So you really, if you're not close to a market, that's going to be a big issue for you too. Anyway, so the interesting thing is that these guys that are, so Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, that are selling the 3s to 7s, these 3s to 7 bales always inadvertently contain some 1 and 2 in them.
Sure.
And that is really the answer to this question of, is it rubbish? Why are people paying for it if it just ends up on the street? And what it is, if people are cherry picking out the value, which is only the 1 and 2, and the rest isn't recycled. So it's literally just like stripping out the copper wire out of a broken appliance. And
holy
then that's
smokes,
why the
really?
Rest is getting dumped. Yep. Totally. So I've spoken to a couple of people and nobody could tell me. These are people who are quite high up in the recycling scene in New Zealand, and nobody knew of a legitimate market for the actual 3s to 7s, except 4 or 5. It's all different.
So, sorry, this is the answer to the Malaysia mystery?
This is the answer to it. So, yes, they pay that $10,000 or whatever it is for the bale, but only because they're wanting to get the good stuff out of it.
That tiny amount that accidentally got in of higher quality recycled materials, they strip that out, and there's enough margin in it for the, for that to be worth it.
Yes.
And they just burn the rest.
Yep. Or burn or dump or whatever.
Man.
So that is the answer to it. That's how it's both and.
Do you know, see, that's the thing. Because all of that, there's got to be some use for that material, even if we haven't sort of found it yet.
I don't know if that's the right line of questioning. I wonder if it is, can we just please stop buying making this
of
stuff?
Of course, of course. But realistically, it's going to be both, right? It's going to be both at the same time, at least in the short term. We're not immediately going to stop.
Look, in the short term, we don't have a system in place, right? So either we're putting a lot of energy into trying to work out what to do with it, or we just legislate. Like, both are going to take a bit of turnaround time and a bit of effort.
Yeah. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what's in my head. All of those news stories I keep seeing about genetically modified algae that can turn plastic into stuff, into, like, break it down into you know, usable gas and other materials that are usable. It feels like if we can, you know, find some process that can take care of the 3s to 7s.
Oh, I don't like that train of thought. It's just...
well, that stuff's going to exist, right?
Okay, look, if...
I'm talking short term, though.
I'm not saying that it's always a bad idea. I'm just saying in terms of a philosophy, like, big picture, as humans, we're in a big mess on the planet because of this particular line of thinking that we can pretty much do what we like and apply a technological solution to keep doing the things that we like.
Big fan of that.
That's why you're here. As opposed to taking a step back and looking at something systemically. So if we're going to use a really holistic approach to whatever that problem is, we're always going to be saying, what outcome do we want? And it, in terms of the best outcome to get ourselves out of this hole, it is stop putting the carbon in the atmosphere and stop taking the resources. And so it's about using as little energy as possible and about returning resources into that circular economy.
Yeah.
So if that's what the algae is able to do, then that's great. That some of these so-called solutions, if you actually look holistically about the energy footprint of them, for example, or if you look at what things are being made into, or just because you might be able to solve something at the end of that process doesn't mean that it's okay to extract it and create it in the first place, because there's still harm done at that point.
Totally agree. And actually that triggers a thought that I had early on, which I'd forgotten about recycling, which is the energy cost of turning these raw materials back into something usable must be huge, right? Like, I'm thinking of having to melt down glass to make new glass. there must be a lot of energy that's being used.
Yes.
To create that heat.
There is a lot of energy, but there's a lot, basically across the board for whatever the material is, it's way more energy intensive to extract it.
Sure.
So for glass, it is 21%.
Oh, you've got these numbers.
I do. No, I just pulled that out of my head, Tom. Damn it, you ruined it.
I'm impressed you've got them on the page, to be honest. That's great.
Yep, they're there. So glass is 21% less energy intensive.
Gotcha.
And so that is actually the one that is most marginal. The others are better.
Right.
For aluminium, it's actually 96% less energy to make from recycled than it would be from virgin.
That makes sense to me because I've forgotten the stats, but in New Zealand even, we use a crazy amount, like a huge percent of our total power grid for aluminium smelting.
That's right. I remember hearing that and being just like fascinated.
It's
actually
like a fifth
it's
or
huge,
something.
Isn't
so
it?
I think it's about 20% of our total energy goes into that one thing.
That's an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, this has been, I'll say it, terrifying, but so informative. Mainly the Malaysia mystery is the terrifying bit. Like, the solution to that is just, it blows my mind. But I genuinely feel so schooled up on this now. I had no idea how recycling worked before. And the answer is that there's multiple answers for where it goes. I really feel like I know a lot of the different ones now. Mm. So some of it is being processed locally. Some of it is being shipped overseas. Some of it is going badly, but some of it isn't as well.
That's right. And it just depends on what it is. And it's always the threes to sevens that are causing the issue.
So bearing that in mind, what is the big recommendation for people here, Wave, to try and positively affect this cycle? Is it, should we literally be looking when we're in the supermarket and going, that's a five, so I should get that version of this product?
Absolutely. Yep, definitely. So I've called it crawling from the belly up list.
Love it.
Because I've started with the basics and I'm moving up to like the best possible solution. So at the most basic level, if you're finding that you're holding a plastic number 3, 4, 6, or 7 in your hand, you should be putting that in the landfill, regardless of where you live.
Wow.
Well, right, because that's just what we said. You put it in a landfill here, or it can end up in Malaysia being burnt somewhere or whatever. Yep. So chuck it in the landfill. And we didn't get a chance to talk. Maybe this is some great stories behind this stuff too, but regardless of where you live, landfill your Tetra Paks, your cartons, and your receipts.
Always landfill them.
Landfill them, yeah.
And your general rubbish.
Yep.
The reason being?
Because
they're not able to be.
So what's really worth noting is that the...
What's the third one? Sorry, Tetra Paks, receipts.
And the plastics. Oh, I just mentioned cartons. Like, in other words, depending on what you call them. A Tetra Pak or a carton.
Yeah,
like a
For me, the thing that soy milk comes in.
Yes.
That always, don't recycle that.
No.
Yep, gotcha.
No. So the noteworthy thing to say here is Fonterra's Milk for Schools program is genuine. So if you're recycling your Tetra Paks through the school program, that's great. They've got a great relationship with a plant in Thailand, and that whole plant is especially designed to process the Tetra Pak. It's a specialist plant, and it's actually able to pull out the metal and the fiber and do something with it.
Right.
But if your Tetra Paks are just going through your regular curbside recycling into a normal facility that's going to bale it up with paper, it's considered paper, and so it then ends up in the paper bale and, for example, might go to Carter Holt Harvey here in Auckland, where it goes into an enormous, like sort of two-story high porridge bowl, and they pulp it, just add water and keep mixing it around and pulping it, and the fibre's typically lower, and you get this gunge coming off the top.
Right.
That gunge just goes off, basically gets extracted out, and it goes to the waterworks, the sewage treatment.
Oh no.
Yeah, and so that is really what's happening to your Tetra Paks, because you just can't get into something that has got plastic and metal squished together, you can't somehow get the paper fibre out of that, and you're certainly not getting the anything else out of it through that process. So it's a labour-intensive or a very energy-intensive way to...
Tetra Paks.
So I'll always go for a clear bottle, plastic bottle, over a coloured bottle or a Tetra Pak.
Gotcha. Dang. I've got to change another thing. Okay, that's good to know.
Recover. And yeah, so the better still would be to just focus on only buying plastic number 1, 2, or 5. 5, depending on where you live, is probably going off in a mixed bale or whatever. I don't know, but there is some really good potential for us to be developing that market, and we've already got at least one recycler in New Zealand that's able to actually deal with it here. So I think that's a good thing for us to carry on focusing on 1, 2, or 5. Better, even better, is to just avoid plastic wherever you can and go for glass instead.
That's better.
That is better.
Okay.
Because
do you know if it's holistically better considering the weight of it?
I do. I found a really good article in The Guardian about it. It does depend on how far you are away from your glass processing facility.
Gotcha.
But in New Zealand, we're good.
Cool.
Yeah. So definitely, but glass, like, yes, it's heavier, but if you look at the idea of a bottle mucking around in the ocean for the next 10,000 years versus plastic, it just doesn't have any of those associated issues.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
And glass is good.
Glass is good. It's, well, it's better.
Come on. Give me that one. We've got to have some simple takeaways from this.
Glass is good. Well, it's alliteration, so let's go with it. I also was, when I was talking to people for this episode, I really enjoyed the conversation I had with Biss and Wanaka Bisbison, who's the ops, recycling ops manager there.
Shout out.
Yep, totally, dude. And I said, what's the one thing, Biss, that if you could say to people to do, what would it be? This is the recycling manager, right? This is what he does for the last, I don't know, few decades, as he's just been up in his arms, rolled up with dealing with this stuff. And do you know what he said? It was so cool. He said, buy more local.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And so it's like, what do we need plastic for?
It's the one thing that keeps every episode.
We just need the shit to ship it around the world, to get it from A to B and to the place that we're not or were or whatever. So buy more local. And then he said, which is kind of a cool thing if you're just taking some of those first steps, is that within that, just do one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and interestingly, top three things that we buy in the supermarket every week are milk, bread, and the last one's a bit random, broccoli. But anyway, milk and bread, quite easily. Like the one thing he decided to do was just buy sourdough at the local market.
That is recycling.
That is recycling.
This might be one of our biggest episodes to date.
It's a goodie.
Both in information and duration, but I think a journey well worth going down. Thanks, Wave. It's so good to get to tap into your years of expertise on this issue.
Oh, it's nice to be on solid ground, actually.
It's been great to be able to glean good factual information, get the good oil on something I knew nothing about. I'm going to be buying more glass and less of everything.
Can I just finish with that shout out to the submission?
Please do.
It is literally the biggest opportunity we're going to have for years to make submission to the Ministry of the Earth and Environment on the proposed priority products and stewardship scheme guidelines. So highly recommend you get in there. We'll have
link
some
in
stuff
the
in the show notes, maybe give you some highlights on what to do. Just get in there, support it, let the government know that we care.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for submitting. I'm going to assume you're doing that. That's how you get people to do stuff. You thank them for doing it before they've done it.
Thank you, Tim. Good tip.
And thank you for rating and reviewing us on whatever platform you're listening on. And we will catch you in the next episode of How to Save the World. Goodbye.
I see what you did there. Thanks heaps to Huckleberry, your organic grocer, who believe in organics for everyone. Head into your local Huckleberry to make the most of their weekly specials or shop online at huckleberry.co.nz.